A workplace, no matter the size, is always presented as a center for opportunity and fairness to those stepping into the picture as a new hire. You know, think back to your work career. How fast did that picture change or even get erased? I think we can all say that to varying degrees. The next guest takes us into her past work career, where the employer was seen as a golden ticket, but the price for that ticket grew more and more costly in a variety of ways. She opens the door to a work environment that, well, many say is a thing of the past, but is it? Her book is Bully Market, My Story of Money and Misogyny at Goldman Sachs. We say good morning to Jamie Fiore Higgins. How are you today, Jamie?
I'm well. Thanks for having me on.
And Jamie's website, which we have, of course, linked at our homepage, jamiefiorehiggins.com, to get your copy of the book, find out more about her story that we won't be able to touch on here for time restraints, but we'll get into as much as possible. And as I mentioned, Jamie, your employer was indeed, as far as the financial sector was concerned, a golden ticket because you were with Goldman Sachs. And we'll talk about your path to Goldman Sachs because some people, like yourself, earn it. And as you got inside, you learned that, well, not everyone got in there that way. But as far as your path to Goldman Sachs, what did it entail?
So for me, when I started senior year in college, the directive from my parents was pretty clear to get the best paying job possible. In 1998, that was Wall Street. And I really couldn't blame them because they came from modest means, grew up in poverty, really had pulled themselves out of that into the middle class and wanted us, me, my brother and sister, to kind of keep it going. Every generation must do better. So I focused on Wall Street. And at the time, probably still today, the best firm on the street was Goldman Sachs. So I made it my mission to work there. I got through 40 interviews over the course of 3 months to kind of land, as you say, this golden ticket of financial analyst at Goldman. And what I found when I first got there, to your point, is many of my colleagues only had a handful of interviews to get there because they were connected. They were children of partners. They were neighbors of partners. They were clients of the firm.
Are there, in an environment like this, I mean, you go into something of that level, you expect it to be highly competitive, high pressure, turning it into the story of today. You saw Elon Musk basically demanding, I want my people working more and staying later and sleeping on the floor if they have to, their office. But in an environment like that, are there allies? And how fast can you develop those allies or at least collaborators in helping you get through whatever it is you have to deal with that particular, I was going to say day, maybe even that hour?
Yeah, there are allies. And yeah, I mean, you work really hard at Goldman, and I don't begrudge that, right? It's called work, not fun.
Yeah.
The problem is you have to deal with a lot of unnecessary stuff. And I will say a lot of that unnecessary, I call it the white noise of Wall Street, is focused on women and kind of any group that is othered at that organization, people of color, LGBTQ+. Now, I did have allies. I had an amazing mentor, and I had a great kind of work friend who was my work husband to kind of help me navigate. Unfortunately, though, that can only get you so far. And I even appreciate that because I was a mentor. I was the ally to many other junior women. And what happens is, though, as much as you advocate for each other, it comes with a price. And at the end of the day, when I would advocate for people, where people would advocate for me to the people in power, you know what? You could only push so far because if not, you're considered a troublemaker. And then you're told you're going to pay by either not getting promoted or not getting paid. So there is some support networks at the firm, but they only go so far because people are really afraid to push the top.
What that brings into question, too, because with you being there 17 years, as far as in those beginning and middle years, you would think in a structure there has to be for it to survive, like a Goldman Sachs has survived through thick and thin in the financial markets, there has to be some significant leadership that can address some problems, put out fires, and things like that. What was the leadership like, and how did you – what was the learning curve as far as understanding what that leadership was like?
Well, the leadership is excellent when it comes to the business side of matters, right? Goldman hires the sharpest, smartest people, always knowing how to navigate the latest market trends or the latest regulatory trends. So, you know, we were taught, and listen, I really value the skills that I learned at Goldman to constantly anticipate what the next trade was going to be, what the next problem was going to be that I was going to help navigate. The problem is the leadership failed when it came to personnel issues. So if it was coming to the business and the bottom line, yes, all hands on deck, thoughtful, innovative planning. But when it came to managing people's careers, and looking at employees a little more holistically and protecting them from harassment, intimidation, bullying, the leadership wasn't there.
All right, Jamie Fiore Higgins, her book, Bully Market, My Story of Money Misogyny at Goldman Sachs, jamiefiorehiggins.com, her website. You're listening to Issues and Ideas. With what you said in the forefront of the listener's mind right now, give an example of what the most blatant, I guess you would say, fairness in the workplace violation you came across that was the turning point as far as, okay, now I know what I'm in for here.
You know, to your point, early on, it wasn't directed toward me. It was just existing. I always call it the white noise of Wall Street. I observed the comments, those kind of slightly, you would consider them less damaging, more innocuous. But as I got up the food chain and I was seen as a threat, the harassment, the intimidation was more targeted. So when I first had my first stint as a manager, I had to take one of my subordinates off an account because he was having an affair with someone at that company, and that is inappropriate. And so I pulled him into an office to tell him I was going to switch his coverage so he would no longer be covering a client he was having an affair with. And he pinned me against the wall. He grabbed me by the neck. He started to choke me because he was so outraged. It was such a shocking, upsetting, violating experience. And fortunately, he kind of must have seen what he was doing. He let me go, ran out of the office. It was the end of the day, and I reported it the next day. And I was advised by my manager that although I could report it to human resources, that they were not getting rid of this guy because he had something better than a 4.0 from Harvard. He was a scratch golfer and got them access to all the golf courses across the country. So although he said I could go to HR, he said to me, imagine how difficult it's going to be managing him after you report him to HR. And you know what, Chris? It was my first gig as a manager. It was my first opportunity to make money. I was building a family at home, and so I kept my mouth shut. But then I knew the price for success at Goldman Sachs.
That's why people are probably asking. We talk a lot here in the history of this show about domestic violence as one of the points, issues that we've placed a focus on over the many years. And a question with that realm comes into play here. If it's so bad, why does she stay?
Yep. And, you know, that's a really good question, and I understand it from my readers and even from people listening right now. And, you know, for me, coming out of connections into Goldman, feeling like I got this golden ticket for my family, making more money than my family's ever seen, they're very good at Goldman making you feel like you're nothing without them and you're nothing without their money. I really felt I was stuck. It might be hard to believe, but that is the truth. And I recently spoke at a book festival, and I spoke to like 300 people, and that kind of theme came up, like, why did you stay? And I was just so afraid to leave that I wouldn't be able to support my family of origin and the family I was building. And the presentation was over, and a woman came up to me and said, you know, I understand why you stayed. I stayed with an abusive husband for 20 years. And I don't say that lightly, Chris, because I know that I wasn't in a relation, like a domestic violence relationship with a partner, but yet there are some of the same manipulation, gaslighting, and imposter syndrome here that you could really make a lot of parallel points between, you know, what I went through and what people who are victims of domestic violence. My girlfriend would always say to me that Goldman was my abusive boyfriend. They would pay me all this great, you know, bonuses and give me all these perks and then beat me down for the rest of the year.
Throughout her book, you can read about how Jamie endured and had to overcome, how she had to build her foundation, and just for simple survival in a what was already an intensive workplace. Just real fast with that 30 seconds left here, Jamie, the Me Too movement is given credit for resolving a lot of these issues. Is this an issue that's still hanging over industries, and because of the brighter light on them, they're just getting better at hiding them?
I think it's a little bit more of the latter. I have heard from hundreds of people since my book came out, not even, you know, a couple months ago, and it is clear that this still is going on to this day, and it's not just in finance. It's in law. It's in medicine. It's in politics. It's in media. It's in small business, because you know what? You only need two people for a power dynamic. So although I think, for example, my assault would not have been tolerated to this day, I think that would have not been tolerated today, I still think this is going on, and I have hundreds of emails to prove it.
One other lesson you learned from Jamie's book, too, is the significance of having a spreadsheet of freedom for whatever it is that you're in to get to wherever it is that you want to go. That's one of the many lessons that you're going to find out from Jamie's book, Bully Market, My Story of Money and Misogyny at Goldman Sachs. It's reality. And it's part of the world today. Maybe it's even part of your world. You can find some camaraderie in Jamie's telling of her long story. JamieFierroHiggins.com, the website. Jamie, thank you so much for coming up with a book that is going to, I think, empower people who think they have to suffer in silence. Again, it's almost an analogy with domestic violence when you think about it again, too. But I think your book is a story of empowerment, and thank you for doing that, for being here.
Thank you so much for letting me come. I appreciate it.